Program is supported by a grant from Seagate Technology. Seagate is a worldwide supplier of disk drives for PCs and servers and innovations for products like the Microsoft Xbox, digital video recorders, and digital jukeboxes. Information is at Seagate.com. It's Friday, November 7, 2003, 10:04 on the central coast of California. It's time for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. My name is Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today on Geek Speak, we're taking your calls, starting about 10 minutes. Anything you want to know about computers or technology, give us a ring. The phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll free at 1-800-655-5877. Or you can go to Geek Speak. Click on the geeks and then send a message, geekspeak.org. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air room with me are geeks, Sean Cleveland, Senior Technical Marketing Manager for Transmeta, a student of American Literature, Miles Elam, and owner and operator of Felton Games, John Tracy. FeltonGames.com, John Tracy. Geeks, welcome of the Geek Speak.
Good morning. Morning,
good morning, Lyle.
How you guys doing? You're so on top of it this morning. You're all busy doing research, not snoring at all. And it's very nice to have you guys just flown along like you do.
Actually, that was John snoring.
Yeah, of course. Well, John has a lot to do. You know,
I have two kids.
Is that why I'm tired? I've got a kid. All right. News this morning. Sean, let's start with you, sir.
Well, the U.S. Regulators are saying that people with Microsoft Windows should turn off a feature that lets people lets marketers turn on pop-ups.
Who's saying to do this?
So, U.S. regulators, the FTC.
Okay.
So, what has happened is Federal Trade Commission has just popped a company called D-Squared Solutions. It was a company that sold pop-up blocking software using pop-up ads. And what they found, going through their software, I guess, and figuring out exactly what's happening with pop-ups, is that you don't need pop-ups don't necessarily happen just through your browser. They can happen when the browser's not running. And we got a call about this, I think, a couple of weeks ago.
It's a different kind of pop-up. It's a Windows Message pop-up.
Yeah. So what's called Windows Messenger Service. So what they're asking people to do or recommending people to do is to turn off Windows Messenger Service, which would stop this sort of thing
Miles,
from happening.
What is Windows Messenger Service for?
It's basically for interdepartmental communication. It's, you know, in a company, you want to send a quick message to someone. It's kind of like an in-company instant messenger, except it's over TCP/IP. It's not the same thing as Microsoft Messenger, IM client.
So Windows Messenger, the general concept is that all the machines, what you could do in a small, in an office environment with lots of computers, is an administrator could say, you know, exit the building now. It could be an emergency system in that regard.
Likely ones would be similar to the Novell messaging that was done in the past, which is saying, get off of this server, I need to reboot it, or save all your files, the network is going down for short maintenance.
Okay, getting off the server makes sense. You see the connected IP addresses, and you just send a message to each one of those IP addresses.
Company meeting in the big meeting room at 9 o'clock.
The thing that confused me a little bit of why Microsoft has this on by default for companies. You'd think that they'd say, go ahead and turn this on if you're a corporation. But the annoying thing is that anybody can trigger this event if it's enabled. There's no kind of security parameters. So what's happening is this company kind of maliciously made something to basically turn the switch off and then started advertising by triggering this event on people's computers saying, if you don't like this anymore, go to this website and buy our product and we will disable it for you, when really it's just a feature of Windows you can turn off.
They're by no means the only ones, but they're the ones who recently got caught and fined for it.
Sean, have you turned off Messenger Service on your machine?
No. You know, I was assuming that this would be turned off in the services section.
But you're not finding it in XP?
Not really.
Okay, well, look a little bit about it, and we'll go on with news. I'm sure that we'll talk a little bit about how you turn this service off.
At home, I'm running Windows 98, which should have it constantly popping up. But I've found when because I have a home DSL Firewall. Gateway kit, well, when I had DSL, it was blocking all of those attempts. So if you have one of those DSL home gateway kits with a NAT, in other words, one box and then multiple computers behind it and a home network, you aren't going to receive these instant messengers.
So the NAT is not for that request.
Technically vulnerable to
okay. Unless, of course, you inside your network, someone triggers that event, and then all the computers, like an off. The reason why it exists.
Right.
Really. So
right.
Seb and you can do that to each other.
Seb being my housemate, just so everyone sure. is clear on that conversation.
So the service is not called Windows Messenger. It's just called Messenger. That's why I couldn't find it.
Okay.
So you can either go to your control panel, and then open up Administrative Tools and then click Services tab, or you could go to your Run, type in msconfig, and then go to the Services tab, and then it's called Messenger.
So msconfig is a little easier, actually, because some people don't have Administrative Tools enabled. So you go to Start, Run, and msconfig.
C-O-N-F? C-O-N-F-I-G. msconfig.
Okay.
And then that is a nice little application because not only can you see what services are running on your computer, you can see what applications are starting when Windows boots up, what's running in the background.
And disable as much as
and
you
disable them
feel
if you'd
safe
like.
Doing.
Yeah.
So you go to the service tag, you find Messenger, and you push stop?
Yes. You just take the checkout.
It's that easy.
There's check boxes.
We should make an application that does this. And thank you very much for that.
And then advertise it with Papa Vest.
Sure, exactly. Thank you very much for that for the news. John?
Miles, what do you mean when you used to have DSL?
Oh, that's a long, sordid story that involves no longer having DSL with SBC or PacBell originally and wanting to move to Cruise.io. And basically, because the company that Cruise.io gets the DSL through is SBC, SBC has to release the line and turn it back on again, basically, for us.
And the first message they gave you was? So they disabled the service because someone didn't pay the bill.
Right. Okay. I mean, that was totally
And then
know,
you're like,
justified.
You know, it's off anyway. Let's go ahead and go to a local provider anyway because you happen to know the people at Cruise.io, so why not?
Well, actually what happened was we'd had the service for so long that we had a deal that was no longer available.
Oh,
and
so you couldn't
so
turn it back on?
Basically we said, okay, let's go back to what we were before. Nope, sorry, we're going to charge you $15 more per month. That's when we went, okay, that's enough. We're going to go to another provider. The whole point behind having multiple DSL providers is that if you don't like one, you can go to another one. And so called up Cruise.io and signed up for it. And Cruise.io was basically saying, well, we have to wait for SBC to give us the line.
And the Cruise.io warned you about this.
Yes. Yeah. Or the Cruise.io website has information on this, okay. saying that it's common to take 3 weeks or more. There's been phone calls being made, and one of them was, sorry, there's a short in your line.
So SBC is telling you this.
Yeah, except for the fact that there wasn't a short in the line when it was working, and we haven't done anything to the line since then. So there's some shadiness.
So they're dragging their feet to some degree.
It appears, I can't say for sure, but it appears so. It's really annoying.
I wouldn't be surprised to see a lawsuit about this in the future, because this whole idea of making carriers have to support multiple DSL providers is to reduce the cost on the consumer. And if SBC is making it difficult to switch out, then they're not following the guidelines of that purpose.
When I looked at some information on Cruise.io's website, they were saying that a way to avoid this is to sign up for a second DSL line because that will be quicker than turning off an existing one and turning it back on again. So signing up for a new one, having that one have it be overlapped, and then when your existing one comes back on again, you can cancel the one you just signed up for.
Oh, my God. You know, I'm not happy with my connection up in Brookdale. At one point, I had full-speed DSL, and then it kept dropping off. And then I have to go restart my DSL modem, you know, to reestablish the connection. And finally, that just got old. And I found out from Chris Dunphy, who lived up in Boulder Creek at the time, that if I knock my speed in half, I physically call them and say, hey, please drop my speed in half, that it stays connected. Well, that worked, but recently, even now, it's dropping connection all the time.
Hmm. I wonder if that's
very frustrating.
Or increase in traffic.
Possibly increase traffic or the weather.
I'm thinking the weather.
Yeah. Hmm. All right, well, thank you for filling us in on that. Okay, John.
Notice how I sidestepped that?
You did. Nice. What's the news for you, sir, today?
I've got a bit here about TiVo. TiVo, for those of you who have not been
conscious in the last couple of years.
Yeah. TiVo is a digital video recorder. It's the Uber VCR. It allows you to type in whatever program you want to record, and it records it for you every episode if you want. Today, TiVo reached, well, not today, this week, TiVo reached its 1 millionth customer, which is significant because for a while it looked like TiVo was not going to make it. And in fact, other companies that have made DVRs have gone out of business in the past. So it's nice to see TiVo has a secure foothold in the market.
I was actually that 1 millionth customer.
Sorry, you did just get TiVo.
And you know, I love it.
Yeah. Once you have a TiVo, you cannot go back to watching TV the regular way.
Do you watch more TV now?
I watch more TV in a shorter period of time.
Right. You want to watch that two-hour news program, but you don't want to watch the 30-minute thing about whatever? Yeah, you can skip over that.
And even when the show's getting kind of just dull,
just
like some of the home improvement shows that you know that are out there, let's just fast forward.
Yeah, Trading Spaces
is great
on fast forward.
Yeah.
Anyway, one of the reasons they've done so well is they hooked up with TV provider DirecTV, which is a satellite-based provider. They have an integrated satellite receiver and TiVo combination. That's what we have, and it's totally cool.
Can you get Ethernet through it?
You can if you get a Series 2. They have what they call a home media option. It allows you to hook up to your PCs. If you have a Mac or a PC, you can hook up to that and download movies, music, pictures, and whatever, and view them there.
You can also share your MP3s.
Right.
Play those. And you can also send programs that you've recorded to other TiVos that are connected.
And TiVo is now becoming synonymous, like Kleenex is for facial tissue. It's becoming what's known as, you know, it's now, oh, I have a TiVo, which means I have a DVR. Different companies like Toshiba and Pioneer are starting to include TiVo in their DVD players. So as you're buying products now, you'll be seeing the TiVo name more and more.
You're listening to Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. In the room with me, the geeks this morning, Miles, Sean, and John. The numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. You're welcome to call about anything regarding to technology. If it has electricity, even if it doesn't, you can call and ask us. We might be able to answer. Specifically, we can help you with Macintosh, multiple flavors of OS, Windows, multiple flavors of OS, and Linux, multiple flavors of OS. We can also answer things about the web in general, browsers, email, viruses,
networking,
spam.
See, I'm actually curious as to whether or not the total number of operating systems that we can cover would equal 31. So we could say we serve 31 flavors of OS.
Thank you very much.
So well, if you I thought it was funny.
It's good. So if you want to call in with one of the 31 flavors, 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Of course, you can go to geekspeak.org with your favorite web browser, we like Mozilla, and click on The Geeks and then send a message. Miles, why don't you start off with some more news, sir?
In a similar talk about TiVo being about broadcast and getting information, the FCC has recently adopted the Motion Picture Association of America's suggestion for a broadcast flag scheme, requiring that digital broadcast receivers and anything that connects to them to check for the presence of this broadcast flag, this signal, and apply digital rights management, or DRM, restrictions to its outputs. Basically, there's no such restrictions are required by law. Electronic Freedom Foundation staff technologist Seth Schoen comments, the FCC has decided that the way to get Americans to adopt digital TV is to make it cost more and do less. Basically, it's not changing the digital TV or digital signal spec. All it's doing is making manufacturers go back and have to check for this signal as it's coming through. And so
if it has that signal, not to be allow recording?
Or to digital rights management has a wide variety, one of them being a variety of functions. One of them being that it doesn't allow copying. It may also be depending upon the region you're in, you know, and the like. And what it turns out is that if you bought digital TV equipment right now, it will continue to work forever. The signal isn't changing. But if you buy one after, say, 2005, then you will have one that does less. That you won't be able to do as much as one that you buy now.
Interesting. So buy it now before it gets restricted.
Even better yet, talk to your congressman and tell him to rein in the FCC because they're doing some crazy stuff.
Imagine that.
How much pressure is from the RIA and other groups?
The RIA,
like
not
them,
so much.
You know?
This is the Motion Picture Association of America.
This is the digital picture version.
Yeah, the video version.
So these guys have a lot of pull then to do this sort of thing.
They have extreme amounts of pull.
And all that's going to stop them is an outcry from consumers.
Although an outcry from consumers is what we got with the FCC saying we want the Do Not Call list. And
the RIAA, when they put the squeeze on consumers, there's a story up that says that over a million households deleted all their digital music in the month of August.
Except how would they actually check that? What people are really thinking is that they've turned off their P2P systems, not that they've deleted it, that they aren't available to the wider network. Because
right.
when it comes down to it, how would anyone know, I went onto my hard drive and deleted a whole bunch of MP3s.
Well, okay, the four of us know that very well, but no one else can know what's on your computer unless there's some kind of virus or bug that is informing people.
Unless they're polling. They're asking people.
Yeah, so unless you tell them. We got a call from Dick of Salinas. Thank you very much for calling in. He says that for messenger service on Windows 2000 XP, if you go to Start, then Run, services.msc, so services.msc, and push Enter, you will go to the Windows 2000. You will go to the same feature and be able to disable the messenger service. Specifically, Windows 2000 doesn't have msconfig.
That's correct. That's right.
So services.msc, what you type into the Run command, and then Enter will get you to that same space.
I didn't know that one. It works for XP, too.
Yeah, that's what you mentioned. So thank you, Dick, from Salinas, for calling in and letting us know. All right. Sean, I think it's your turn. Got some news for us, sir?
Yeah. A new study has shown that information technology workers' pay is going down at an average of 1.6% per year in the next year. So what they're showing is this is IT staffing companies and a bunch of different companies who provide jobs in these areas that average starting salaries are projected to fall. And what I wanted to get to was they've actually talked about a bunch of different types of jobs and expected salaries. I don't know if you guys are interested, if you want to know what the expected salaries for a lot of IT jobs are the next year, but I found it pretty interesting. So what they found is average starting salaries for local area network administrators, LAN administrators, people who actually work on the servers, is expected to decrease by 4.5% next year, bringing their base salary range from $43,750 to $62,500. The base compensation for desktop support analysts is expected to drop 5.3% from 40. And the range is expected to be between $47,000 and $65,000.
That's the new range.
Yeah, the new range. So for applications architects, they're actually increasing by 1.9%, between $73,250 and $104,250.
So if you're getting into technology right now, be an application developer.
Application architect, yeah. Salaries for senior internet developers.
Like me.
Like you, is expected to increase 1.9%.
Woohoo!
And the range is $67,250. To 96,000.
Does your boss listen to this show?
Yes, he does.
And systems auditors.
But I don't do that job. So
systems auditors are expected to go up 1.8%. Their salaries range from anywhere from 60,000 to 77,000.
So IT is kind of fluctuating up and down, but the average is going down next year.
Pretty much.
I wonder if that has to do with operating systems and networking becoming more reliable. Whether or not it requires a smaller
But staff. The fastest growing IT job in the industry right now is data security analysts.
Imagine that.
And their range is expected to be between 67,000 and 97,000, rising 2.1%.
Yeah, not paid enough.
And we have a call, we have multiple calls. Savannah from Seaside, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Certainly.
I'm on a fixed budget, and I would like to find out if you can recommend a book or any kind of publication that would help me do my own troubleshooting. For instance, when certain error messages occur, that might give me a clue on what I've done wrong or what I might do to correct the problem.
Are you on a Windows or a Macintosh?
I have Windows 98.
Windows 98. All right. Well, I used to really dislike the whole yellow books that are, you know, Computers for Dummies or whatever that set is. And then we had one, Network for Dummies, and we had the guest on the show, and I just thought she was wonderful. And the book was really clear. It wasn't designed for me as an audience member, but it was definitely designed for someone that doesn't want to spend their lives in technology but wants to be able to do their own things. So I would recommend the Dummies series. That's all I can think of. I know that's a horrible thing to say to you. Go get a Dummies book. But they've got some good stuff, and they're targeted for someone that doesn't have a lot of time to spend on their machines but just wants to get things fixed. Geeks, do you have any suggestions on books?
The web is always a great place to look up troubleshooting. I know it's hard when you're having problems with your computer to use the Internet.
I'm not on the web at this point.
Oh, okay. So books would be primarily the way you'd go. Also, are there any users groups for Windows around? I know there's a Mac user group.
She's not online, though. She's kind of...
No, I mean a local users group where people get together and... Is there a Windows?
I don't know one locally. I don't know one, especially in Seaside. That is another option. Do you have an ISP at all? Do you do email?
Not at this point, no.
Okay, so you're mostly like editing Word documents and such?
Exactly, and I have a couple of programs to do to upload my digital pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And yesterday I tried to work with it, and I got something that says I can't remember what it was. I knew it ended with EXE. They could not find it, and then when I clicked locate, it gave me the same message. And I had the thing is, I had done it before, and I don't understand why it's not working now. And I just thought if I could just get a clue of you know what to do, that would be helpful. Mainly, my thrust right now, what I plan to do is take a lot of pictures with my digital camera and get them onto my hard drive. And then eventually, once I get back on the web, I want to upload them to eBay or one of the auction sites.
And be able to sell stuff. Well, yeah, I would recommend troubleshooting your PC for Dummies. It's available at pretty much any store, I think. It's got pretty good reviews on Amazon.com. People seem to like it.
Can I ask one more question?
Sure.
Do you know if there's any software available for the novice or the lay person to recover material that's lost on their hard drive? I unfortunately deleted a bunch of stuff.
Did you then erase your recycling bin?
Yes, unfortunately.
Okay. Yeah, there are some software packages that do this, but once you've done it, how long ago did you erase the stuff?
It's been some time ago, about 6 months ago.
It's pretty much gone then at this point. If you right afterwards go and get software, or preferably get software beforehand that you then install, but the best thing to do is be a little more careful with it. But you could theoretically install a package right now, but all it would do is, if you made that mistake again, it would maybe be able to help you.
Okay.
Unfortunately, the best way to do it is that eventually, after erasing your stuff, and you erase something that you really wanted, and you don't get it back, you tend to remember pretty well not to do it again.
Oh, of course.
So, by this point, if you would have just done it and called in, I would have recommended some ways you could have tried to find it. Sean, do you have one?
Yeah, OnTrack Data Recovery. Of course, you don't have a web connection, but if you go to OnTrack.com, it's also sold at Fry's and other stores. You could probably order it here in town, too, at various stores. OnTrack Data Recovery, what it does is it goes off and searches your hard drive for deleted data. And what Lyle said is correct. The data may not be there because, you know, Windows is always writing in new areas of your hard disk. So when you deleted those files, you created space, but it could have been written over already. But it's possible that it might not have. And they have a free version that's downloadable from their website that what it does is it's a crippled version. But it goes off and finds... You know, it looks, and it'll let you know what it finds.
What was that again, OnTrack?
OnTrack.com.
Okay.
So you can give that a try and at least see if the data's there. And I think it lets you recover one or two files, a very minimal amount. But if it's important to you, then you can go buy the software and know that it's worth buying.
There's one more book that I'm going to recommend to you, and it's called PC Help Desk in a Book. And it's the subtitle is The Do-It-Yourself Guide to PC Troubleshooting and Repair. And it actually has better mentions on Amazon, which means that people found it more useful. Again, it's called PC Help Desk in a Book,
okay.
And it's paperback. and she'll be able to pick that up at any store or purchase it.
Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much for calling in to GeekSpeak.
Thank you.
Tom from Bonnie Doon, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Thank you very much. I'm up here in Bonnie Doon, and I've been offline for a little while, and I want to get back on the email and browse the web. And I'm tired of the slowness of dial-up, and I want to go either DSL or cable modem. Could you advise me on a selection of DSL versus cable modem, what I should expect in either one?
Okay, to my knowledge, in Bonnie Doon, you cannot get cable modem. You can get digital cable, but that's only for broadcasts, more variety of broadcast television. Can't actually get internet on cable modem in this area at all, to my knowledge. In Bonnie Doon, the providers will tell you you won't be able to get DSL. If your neighbors have DSL, it means you might be able to. My thought is that you probably won't be able to get DSL up there.
Yes, I do have two neighbors that have it.
Okay. Since you have neighbors that have it, you can do it. Then
so
I would
within, let's say, 200 yards.
Yeah, you'll be okay. So I would recommend calling your local ISP and asking them for DSL, and they should be able to help you out.
Okay.
And we've been talking about Cruise.io today, so I'll just keep on talking about Cruise.io. Cruise.io will offer DSL service to anybody in Santa Cruz County and a little beyond, I think. So Cruise.io, and if you just stay with me in just a minute, I'll be reading out their phone numbers.
Okay. And the other thing is if a cable modem does become available here, is there a big advantage other than speed?
There's actually... Cable modem and DSL are going to offer pretty much the same speed. DSL can be faster in some places, and cable modem can be faster. The more people in the network on the cable modem, the slower the speed.
Except in practice, that hasn't been the case. They found that it hasn't been that big of a deal. But the thing is, you're not going to get the big download speeds for either one because your limiting factor is the website that you're talking to, which will almost in all cases be slower than your connection.
So you're fine. Your cable or DSL is going to be so good that you won't really worry about it.
Okay.
Especially if you're used to a dial-up connection.
Comcast is advertising something like 3 times faster speed with cable modem.
If you can get it from them, get it. But
cable is typically faster.
Really?
Yeah.
See, I didn't find that the case.
Well, for big downloads, though, but the thing is, the limiting factor is usually not your connection speed.
Yeah.
It's how fast the remote.
If you're surfing the web, then. Yeah, it's exactly right.
Yeah.
It's the speed at which the server that's serving the web page can get it to you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, go for price and what the service for the company can give you.
Thank you very much. You've been very helpful.
Certainly. Thank you, Tom, for calling. Now, Tom, if you do find that Comcast is offering a cable modem here in Santa Cruz County, please let us know. If you have questions or comments, the numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877.
We have an email. A couple emails, too.
Okay, we'll get to them in just a second. This program is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronics parts, as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. You're listening to GeekSpeak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air room, Sean, Miles, and John. This program is supported by a grant from Cruise.io, providing internet services, including DSL and spam filters, for home and office throughout Santa Cruz County. Information about Cruise.io membership is available online at cruise.io.com or by calling 459-6301. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KSP. My name is Lyle Troxell. We're taking your calls and questions. If you'd like to, you're welcome to go online, geekspeak.org, click on the Geeks, and then send us a message. Just like these fine people did. Sean?
Okay.
Way to drop
so,
it on you.
So actually, this has to do with DSL and cable.
Okay.
The first question from Gabe is, would you want just a quick summary between the differences, pros and cons of DSL and cable? So we just kind of hit those for the most part. Now, the second part of the question talks about static versus dynamic addresses, IPs. So that might be something worth mentioning, because there are different types of internet services.
And he has listed there that he's worried about privacy as well with respect to that, whether it has an effect or not.
So with DSL, typically what people get is PPP, which is you've got a phone in or you've got a dial to get your connection using software on your computer.
Well, using software in the DSL modem.
And the DSL modem, correct. So just because you have the DSL doesn't mean you're connected. You actually have to run special software to get connected. So
what?
Sharing...
Wait, DSL, normally the modem takes care of it for you.
Always. No. The router can take care of it for you if it's configured properly. But the modem doesn't automatically dial and make the connection for you. You have to install special software with SBC.
Okay, see, I thought that pretty much all the packages now come with a modem router that basically it is set up to dial for you.
Mine actually does.
Does it really?
I think the newer ones do that.
Well, all my neighbors still have software they have to dial through.
Actually, I think it's just the opposite, that the older ones don't, and then the newer ones have the PPP over point-to-point protocol over Ethernet. The PPP.
That's all I've known is that you've got to do that.
Okay.
I paid more money to have
a router.
Them come out and put in a hardwired DSL connection.
So
nothing to do with the router at all. So I hook it up to my computer and I'm live. All I need is my IP address, and the settings in my computer. And I've got five IP addresses, yeah. But that costs extra money. Typically, if you just get a basic connection, you get dynamic IP. Because every time you connect, you don't use the static IP. You don't use the same address. So that could be a problem if you're hosting a server.
Which you're not really supposed to do from a DSL line anyway.
Well, no, you could do that from DSL. It's a cable that they don't want you to share multiple connections over.
Okay.
So that's another difference of cable.
So there's in both the DSL and in the cable, there's two different types of connections. You have a static IP or a flexible IP address.
Right.
Which basically means every time you want to get online, if you've already disconnected, which happens kind of automatically for you when you're not using it, you have to make a connection and then you're given a new IP address. Or sometimes new,
right.
New one every once a month, whatever. The static one, you pay for more because you always have the same IP address and you could theoretically host stuff at that location.
Correct.
Now, of the two, which one's more secure?
Dynamic.
It's not a question of security. I mean, if you have dynamic, then it's going to have security through obscurity. In other words, it may be harder to find someone, but it really doesn't afford you any extra safety over...
Right. So the next step
the
is...
The bottom line
is
you need a firewall.
And that comes with a router. And that can work in either environment as well, where you take the router and that has a firewall set up and you plug the modem into that. And then the router will dial out the modem, or if it's a static connect, always connected.
Right. And the router will let you share the connection between multiple computers. But when you sign your cable contract, you specifically promise that you will not share that connection across multiple computers. Because cable, the bandwidth is limited by the number of people who are on it. So you're stealing from everybody else if you're sharing it to 10 computers in your house.
John, you had a...
Just saying, when you set up a router, if you're worried about security, make sure you change the default password. Because when you get a router, it comes with something, it's usually admin and the password is pass. So make sure you change that if you're worried about security.
Yeah, and since I know that we've been leaving behind a whole bunch of our audience, he's gone, what are they talking about? In simplest terms, a static IP versus a dynamic IP. A dynamic IP is like if you... just went around to a friend's house or a payphone just to call up a number and you're calling someone else. A static IP is you're always calling from your house. You have a phone number yourself that other people can call. You have a common place where people can contact you.
And if you think about it, with a server you need a static IP because people need to know where your machine is.
So they can request
They need to know what your phone number is.
Right. All right, we got lots of calls, so we're going to go on. Lance from Santa Cruz, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hello. Yeah, my son has 8 gigabytes of MP3 files on my hard drive, which is only a 10 gig Mac hard drive. And so I want to burn them off onto CDs with the Toast Lite. And so I tried to do that by dragging the whole iTunes file in there, and it didn't seem to want to buy that. I thought it would give me just tell me to put in another CD and another CD and another CD, but it didn't seem to like that.
Do you have iTunes? Are you running OS? Running OS 10?
Yeah.
Okay. iTunes has the ability to make playlists and burn them to CD.
Uh huh.
Now, there's two ways to copy MP3s to CD. One, you take the file and you put the MP3 onto the media as an MP3 player, as an MP3. The other is to burn a CD. An actual audio CD will play in most CD players. You'll only be able to get like 10 songs onto a CD in that form. In the MP3 form, the 8 gig thing, you're only going to be able to get each CD is only hold half a gig, roughly, 6.4.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, 604 megs. So you're going to have to – the way I would do it personally is go ahead and find that many songs that fill up a disc, a CD, and just copy those over to Toast Lite. Now, I'm not sure if Toast Lite is going to work for this, but I think it will.
Yeah.
For just copying files over?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So
you're
really
not gonna
important
get a- You're not going to get a CD you can put in any CD player and play,
right.
But you will have the information.
So what you're talking about is like 12 or 13 CDs.
Right.
Yeah, that's a lot. Now, the other thing you want to do with the Toast, when you start it up, you're not making a music CD. You're making a data CD. That's an important distinction. If you make a music CD, you're only going to fit like 10 songs on there.
Because it's going to convert the MP3 to something that every CD player can read.
Yeah, you're talking about 40 CDs worth at that point.
Right. Which would be nasty. So make sure it's a data CD. You'll be able to fit about 640, depending on the type of media and the burner you have, about 640 megs. Try to only do that. It should tell you when it's full or when it's getting near.
Okay.
Thank you, Elias,
that
for calling.
Very good. Thanks a lot.
All right.
Bye.
And we have Lynn from Capitola. Lynn, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hello. Thank you very much. I have a situation where my wife has an iMac, and it crashed, and she didn't back up her files, so she lost a lot of personal things, not business-related, but just, you know, things, journal stuff she had written. And she had the computer rebuilt by a local company, and they tried to retrieve it, but they couldn't, and they said to her that she should take it somewhere over the hill.
The hard drive?
Hard drive, yes.
Okay. So they replaced the hard drive in the computer?
Yes, they did.
Okay.
And she was very satisfied with what they did for her, but now she wants to try and retrieve the information on the hard drive. And I was wondering if you could recommend anybody, or you know, give me some advice to give her about how to proceed with this.
It's going to cost some money.
Yeah.
Yeah, she knows. She's learned her lesson. I know she's now going to definitely back up everything.
For Mac, I recommend Data Savers. They seem to have the highest recovery rate for anything Macintosh. And what they do is they'll actually pull the platters out. The platter is the disk inside the hard drive that actually contains the information. They'll pull that out and they'll try to recover it, either by putting it into another hard drive that has working mechanisms, you know, where everything's working. If you have access to a bunch of old hard drives, you can try swapping the circuit board on it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to, it's 90% guaranteed not to work, but there's that 10%
now,
chance it might.
It's a higher percentage chance that it will work, but John, you have extra Mac old hard drives lying around. For some reason, I don't think Lynn does. Lynn, do you have extra
hard drives? Oh, gosh. I'm very un-computer-oriented.
Okay, then you're looking at spending upwards of $1,500.
$1,500.
Yeah.
What kind of, I mean, is it based upon, if we're successful, it's $1,500?
Yeah.
If it's not successful, it's...
A little less.
You need to check with the whatever company you end up going with. Each one has their different ways of doing it. So, but no matter what, they will be charging you a certain amount. They have like a minimum fee, usually, I don't know, around $500 to $800.
And they're also going to have to put it on the new piece of media, so you have to send the media to hold it, and normally they like a hard drive that's the same, and they'll often just sell you ones, but you can also send it. The other one to do this with, what's the one you're recommending, John?
Data Savers.
Data Savers. The other one is Action Front Data Recovery Labs, and the reason I mentioned them is in June we had them on the show, and they were very helpful in talking about their process and how you actually do data recovery and everything, so I might as well mention them. We had Ron Austin on from Action Front Data Recovery Labs. And their link is actionfront.com.
And OnTrack has data recovery labs.
And
I used them once. I wrote an article in Maximum PC, and because we had a hard drive that was making horrendous noise. I mean, it was definitely scraping across the platter. The head was.
Yeah.
And we decided to challenge one of these guys, see if they could pull the data off. And so we called OnTrack, and they said, sure, we'll do it. And they got it all. We were amazed.
How much did it cost?
Well...
It was
I was doing it for the
magazine,
so it didn't cost anything, but I think it would have cost a little over $1,000 to do that.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything in particular that she could do that would reduce the cost? Or not really, is there?
What they're going to tell you is don't get any software, don't try anything else, just send it to us right away. And they're going to charge different rates depending on how severe it is. If they're able to pull it off just using software, they will, and they'll charge you less, not a lot less. I mean, we're still talking $600 here.
Okay.
But if it is a hardware problem and the drive land on the platter and some serious damage happened, the more you play with it, the more chances your data will be lost and the more expensive it will be to recover it.
Mm-hmm.
So it really comes to this point of if you go, you know what, I don't want to spend $1,500, but then by all means, go ahead and try getting it into another computer, try to run some OmniTrack software you can download from the web and try to get it recovered, but don't be expecting to have it succeed. If you know you want this data back, go ahead and spend the money.
You won't get the drive. You won't want to use the drive when it comes. Yeah.
Yeah. The drive's going to die. The drive's going to
die. Are either one of these more Mac compatible, or they both do either Mac or IBM?
Data's data.
Yeah, they'll tell you whether they can handle the Mac or not, and they won't. They probably won't play with you unless they can. So.
Okay.
I know Data Savers or Data Recovery Data.
Data Saver.
Yeah, thank you. Data Savers is always up at Macworld, so I know that they're.
Are these both over in the Bay Area? Are they local here in the
area? I don't know where
they
are.
No, I don't know.
Okay.
Usually you deal with them on the website.
Okay, very good.
Thank you, Lynn, for calling in.
Thank you very much.
And Doug from Santa Cruz. Doug, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi. I'm wondering what you think of Panther and if you think I should upgrade.
Panther. Okay, we're going to talk about Panther next week. I have the software in my bag right now. Mm-hmm. Before next week, I'll be installing it and getting it on my Mac and getting a good feel for it. There's some wonderful features in Panther. A couple things of note, and we'll talk. I think we're going to do a full show next week about Panther. But a couple things of note, Panther's navigation and Finder is a little different. We ran into some bugs the other day. When I played with it last night, and the bugs are kind of, I'm not sure if it was things we were doing to it that caused these bugs to emerge. I think they probably were. We were changing user IDs, which is always kind of a scary thing to do. But in any case, if you're running okay right now, are you running OS 10 right now?
Yeah.
Okay. I would go ahead and go with 10.2.8, which is the most recent upgrade of 10.2. That's Jaguar. And go ahead and install to the top of that, and you'll be fine for a while. And wait until at least next week's show before you install,
okay,
before you buy it. All right?
I always try to wait to like 10.3.2a.
Yeah, you like different things, huh?
Well, I mean, just until it's had a few revisions.
Right.
Yeah,
well,
be safe.
Doug, thank you. We'll address all your concerns next week.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
We have an email from Joe. Joe says, I've lost the use of my sound card, a Creative. How can I find it on my hard drive, and how do I activate it? And then he has in parentheses, our IT people replaced our hard drives at work, and who knows what happened thereafter. My guess is when they replaced the hard drives, that did not get reinstalled. The drivers for the sound card did not get reinstalled. If you have an internet connection, you can go up to Creative's website, us.creative.com/support, and up there they have drivers. You can go to downloads and you can look up. Sean, how would you look up what kind of card you have without actually opening the case? Is there any way to do that in Windows?
They should all be compatible with standard Sound Blaster support.
Oh, thanks, Sean.
Sorry.
No, I'm just kidding, Miles. Is it all compatible? What do you mean by that?
In general, since the Sound Blaster PCIs came out, a lot of them have been compatible, or at least binary compatible. Like, there's been a single driver suite that you download for it. That the more advanced cards have more services that are applied to it, but in general, the base card is the same.
Okay. And Sean?
Yeah. I guess what you could do is go to properties on my computer. I mean, Windows is going to detect what kind of sound card you have in it. So if you go to the Device Manager, so System Properties, go to the Hardware tab, then click on Device Manager. In there, you'll see Sound, Video, and Game Controllers, and it should tell you what kind of sound card you have in there. Because Windows has recognized the device, it just can't find the drivers for the device. So that might be one way to check.
Yeah, it may show up as a question mark, actually. If the driver isn't installed, it may show up as a question
mark.
Yeah,
right, correct.
Unknown device.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to go to some more phone calls. We've got lots of people waiting. Donald from Monterey, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes. I had just wanted to make a quick comment with regards to the earlier caller who was asking about troubleshooting advice. And I just wanted to give a plug for the local community college. I took a couple courses there, one on PC repair and one on basic Windows stuff. I mean, it was more Windows kind of system stuff as opposed to just how to use Windows.
Are you talking Cabrillo College?
Actually, Monterey Peninsula is where I went, but it seems like most of the colleges have these sorts of courses. They're one night a week, and they're a bargain compared to what you get out of them, and they're geared towards people who are complete novices.
That's a very good point. There's nothing like educating yourself on how to do this.
Well, and they let you put your hands on a real machine, and you get to play with it, and there's somebody there to talk you through things. So
it's a wonderful recommendation, Donald. Yeah. Thank you. So in Monterey, you went to which college?
Monterey Peninsula College.
All right, Monterey Peninsula College. And it had a good program, and we know that
Cabrillo College
Cabrillo
has a great program.
Too.
Right. And in fact, I think I've seen the same courses pretty much at all the colleges here in the Bay.
It's pretty standard nowadays, and
yeah,
uniformly fairly good.
Thank you, Donald, very much.
Thank you. Oh, one other request.
Yes, please.
I keep missing your shows, and it would be wonderful if you guys could have
them archived
links on your webpage again. Is there any chance of that?
Were you listening to them before when we had them up?
Yeah, a long time ago.
Okay. Yeah, we're in the process, and Miles and I are both right now kind of smiling and saying,
yeah,
you know, anything.
By all means, give SBC a call and tell them they give my DSL line back.
Okay.
You know, I keep on promising people every week that I'm going to have those up and have those up, and it really just comes down to finding the time to get those things back up. But yes, we will have a full archive online again for every show that we've recorded, which I think is every but all but three, something like that. And it's just a matter of time for them to come back up again.
And we'll have some more product reviews up soon, too. I got a lot of hardware I'm sitting on that I need to write up. So,
thank you, Donald, for the interest in the show.
And thank you very much for that comment. It's always nice. That's one of the powerful things about radio is anyone can call in.
Thanks, Donald. And to Dave in Boulder Creek. Dave, welcome to Geek Speak.
Oh, thank you. You had a discussion a couple of weeks ago about alternate web browsers and alternate mail readers and alternate news readers for Macintosh. And I'm running an older Macintosh, a 4400-200. And the latest one that you recommended, which now I don't remember, wouldn't run on my machine because it wanted OS X, and I can't run OS X.
Right.
So
what to do? What browser are you using right now?
Right now I'm using Netscape
4.72.
Something like that, yeah, like 4.8 or...
Okay, so you're using an old Netscape. Are you running OS 9?
Yeah, 9.1 or 9.2, whatever the last one that I could get from Apple was.
Okay.
I know Opera's available, but that one is a pay-for. It's not free.
Oh, Opera's paid-for? I didn't know that. I'm going to see. Let's see. Is Cameo available? It's only OS 10. All right, yeah, so Netscape 6 is going to be your best choice for OS 9. I'm assuming you're pre-OS 9.2. If you're OS 9.2, there's a little more available for you, but not really. Yeah, I would go ahead and go if you really need to have a newer browser, and I'd recommend it because Netscape 4 is old enough now where you'll start seeing a real difference in websites. Websites will look just really plain and boring to you.
Well, we're web developers
and the fact that they curse the name of Netscape 4.
Yeah, it's what were you going to say?
Yeah, well, you know, one of the problems we're having is we're getting crashes. And I'm assuming it's due to some Java applets or something like that, that it's just not running correctly. But, I mean, it's causing, you know, the machine to lock up.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and the only way out is... Go ahead.
It's when you're browsing?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's not so much when I am, but my kids going to, you know, other websites. You know, I'm, you know, if I want to browse, I do it at work, but I do my newsgroup stuff, you know, from there. So I don't see it, but my kids do all the time.
Yeah, Netscape 4 has some bugs where some CSS, a fairly recent way of making web pages, can crash it. There's also Java applets. In general, though, if you're crashing while web browsing, there's a good chance there's something else going on that you're not seeing.
There's another pretty good one out there called iCab. I used it a while back when it was back in beta, and it was pretty neat. It had a cool thing where it allowed you to arrange things, how you're going to print them, which I know is always a pain when you print out web pages. You often get a lot of extraneous pages.
Yes.
They're up to version 2.9.6, and they say they support all the old OSs.
Yeah, the CSS support's pretty weak on it, though.
Is it?
So it seems to be falling behind.
You might be having the same problems then.
It's better than Netscape 4. Don't get me wrong. It's better than Netscape 4.
And I really hate to say it, but Explorer is actually, if you get Explorer Classic, it's actually pretty good for 9. And most websites will support it. I can't believe I'm saying that because I never recommend Explorer. But it may be in this case. You could try it out and see if it works.
I believe I looked at Opera. I think that's the one you guys were talking about a couple of weeks ago. And I just, you know, the latest one would only run on OS X, and I was looking at, you know, earlier ones, and I wasn't quite sure which one, you know, I might want to download. And I thought it was free, but I could be wrong on that.
There's a version that's free, and it gives you a whole bunch of ads while you're doing it that for people who are sponsoring Opera. And that an alternative is you can pay a certain amount of money. It's actually not all that much.
$39.
To get a version that doesn't have ads. It's basically what it boils down to.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get Mozilla, by the way, for OS 9. It's not real easy to find on their website. I'm trying to do that right now as we're speaking about this and not succeeding very well. But I know that they did release an OS 9. They keep all their older versions, which means you're going to be able to get an older version of Mozilla web browser that runs an OS 9, but it won't have all the features.
I don't know if it was all that stable to begin with, yeah. So I'd actually recommend going away from the Mozilla for OS 9.
Okay, I'll not look into that. But you know, you were saying that you thought maybe that there was an underlying problem due to these crashes. Now we do get lockups occasionally for no particular good reason. Where do I start looking to fix those lockups? And I've compressed the drive. I've run Norton Utilities on it.
Are you sure
like
this
that.
Isn't a Windows machine?
it's really difficult for us to be able to do this over the air. It's something that you may have to have someone who's more well-versed with Macs actually sitting in front of the console and looking around.
I'm sure, John, do you have some ideas on this? You could maybe support
him. I'm trying to remember if there's any kind of underlying Java support. I mean, I know there's runtime stuff for Java, but that's for hosting a Java.
And what if you reinstall Java? Would that help?
Well, you could try reinstalling Netscape. I don't know if that'll help, though.
Assuming that Java's doing it, I don't think Java is, because there's not very many Java applets out there. It really depends. If you run into this a lot, it's probably not a Java applet. It might even be Flash, whenever Flash loads or something.
Could it be one of the init? Something that loads it.
Yeah, it
could
background.
Be one of the extensions, yeah.
One thing fundamental, though, is only change one thing at a time. Change one thing and start going and see whether or not that fixes it, because then you'll be able to find out whether or not if you disable something that you don't, that you really would like to have, but then if you disable it or change to something else.
Or maybe go back and check to see what you have, see if there's newer versions.
Dave, what mail client are you using right now?
I'm using the mail through the Netscape application.
Okay. So if you wanted to, like, replace that and go ahead and go with Eudora, Eudora is free. It's an option.
Uh-huh.
But good luck.
mail's not the problem other than the, over 100 spams I'm getting a day.
Right. I know what you mean.
And my ISP seems to want to download them instead of filtering them on, filtering them at their end.
Right. Right. Who's your ISP?
iHighway.
Mm-hmm. Mine as well.
Yeah, I'm really happy with it, by the way. It's just I'm not being given the option to filter it, on their server. I've got to download it and filter it at my end. And when you're on a dial-up like I am, that takes a while.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat as you are. I have Internet Highway, and I'm actually checking it at work, luckily, because it's fast enough. I've got a laptop. But at home, it would take too long to get all my spam down to actually filter it. Once the filtering takes place, though, it's been very nice with the mail client that I use that you can't because you're not running OS 10, which really stinks. I don't have good answers for you, unfortunately, and I'm sorry that you're in a situation you are.
Well, like I said, at work, we're running all the latest stuff, and that's great. But at home, it's driving me nuts. But,
yeah.
I've got kids for that too.
Yeah. Good luck, Dave.
All right. Thank you very much,
Dave. One thing that would probably make you a lot happier if you upgraded it to a newer Mac and running OS 10.
I've got two kids in college. I don't have any money.
I know what you mean. If anyone wants to donate money to Dave's kids to get a new computer, you're welcome to do so by calling.
No, I bought them computers. I just don't have one for me.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
You got them a notebook so they bring it home on the holidays, right?
Yeah, then I use them.
There you go.
Thanks, Dave, for the call. Good
luck. Thank you very much.
All right. Last call, I think, for today. Ellie,
yes.
Santa Cruz, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Thank you. I was last call last week, too. This is a continuation. Upgrade from 98 to XP. And when I try, I don't get the fast user switch screen. I went to settings and I tried to do it. You had suggested to see what was running at startup, and that's not the issue. The error message I get, a recently installed program has disabled the welcome screen and fast user switching. To restore these features, you must uninstall the program. The following name might help you identify the program made the change. Windows System 2, awgina.dll. I traced that back to the PC Anywhere. I don't have the original CD, and I don't have an option of uninstalling it just by going to remove programs.
Was this an application that you had installed back in the 98?
Yes.
Now, and you are running Windows XP now?
Correct.
And if you go to msconfig and the run command, do you see anything of that anything that is regarded that is the Norton?
If I go to, I'm sorry,
okay,
where?
So go to start and run and type msconfig. And then what you're going to see is, Sean, you want to walk them through this at this point?
Yeah, there'll be a bunch of tabs across the top.
Right.
And the last tab's just called startup.
Yeah, and I
that's everything that's loading when you
Yeah, no, it's not there.
Interesting.
Because the error message says that they had over that the program had overwritten, had installed that DLL.
Right. Okay, I think I know.
Probably a registry.
I know what I would do at this point is, and that's go to the run command. Go ahead and close the msconfig. Go to run command. Type ms. I'm sorry. Regedit. Regedit. And then search for that DLL. See if it's in that registry somewhere. Then,
as you find it, delete each entry.
But it's very dangerous.
That
thing to
sounds
do. It is dangerous.
This is not something I'm just going to go charging off.
Well, you can. That's what I'd do at this point. I'd go ahead and investigate if it's starting up. If that DLL is not listed in the registry at all, then find the application that you think should that is running that and find that in the registry.
What is that DLL again? MSG.
He doesn't have that.
I just put that thing. It goes back to a DLL that was installed by
Norton.
No, PC Anywhere is Norton.
Oh, PC Anywhere. Oh, right. The PC Anywhere.
All right, I guess then I should do a safe checkpoint of where my registry is and
Definitely.
Build a recovery disk and then start deleting.
Definitely, do all of that. And, yes, that's the first thing to do, and good luck with that dilemma.
Looks like that's the Microsoft Graphical Identification Authentication DLL. That could be dangerous, yeah. Do some search online. There's looks like there's other people who have had problems and might have solutions.
Okay.
Thank you very much for the call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. This program is supported by a grant from Seagate Technology. Seagate is a worldwide supplier of disk drives for PCs and servers and innovations for products like the Microsoft Xbox, digital video recorders, and digital jukeboxes. Information is at Seagate.com. The Geeks This Morning, Miles, Sean, and John, thank you very much for being on GeekSpeak. To our producer, Maggie Cleveland, thank you. For all of you all of the people that called in today, thank you for making GeekSpeak what it is. Without your support, it would just be us geeking out. Who wants to listen to that? This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP Santa Cruz, KBDH San Arno, on the web at kusp.org. We'll be back next week with a show on Panther. For GeekSpeak, I'm Lyle Troxell. Coming up now is Fine Print.